Hello. Welcome to Running on Purpose, a podcast dedicated to training the body, the mind, and the soul for what the race requires. My name's Steve Sisson, and I'm your host. In this episode of Running on Purpose, I'd like to basically give you guys, well, it's going to be a bit of an unconventional episode. I'd like to give you guys a little bit of a state of the union on where I'm at in the production and consistently producing and putting out this podcast. I want to go over a little bit about the last episode that I did that was a solo episode, the Mission Protocol episode. And then I want to launch into a very short description and discussion of cycles of running, or the importance of life cycles, or thinking of cycling for a runner. That will be a pretty short, extemporaneous 10-15 minute discussion. You know, I have a tendency sometimes to go on and on, so I'm not sure exactly how long it's going to be. But ultimately, the idea here is to more get your attention to those of you who have been listening to this podcast consistently and make a few asks and go through what we learned with the Mission Protocol and start thinking a little bit about that so I can introduce that later on in the season, in the cycle. And then finally, I'm going to go through a pretty short episode on something that I heard recently that I just want to extemporaneously speak on. Okay, I just said that twice, didn't I? So in the last episode that I did that was a solo episode, I did it on the Mission Protocol. And I'm finding that that protocol has got some really good legs. The response to that was pretty excellent. At least I heard about it through either folks emailing me or coming through other channels. So those of you who responded positively, thank you very much. Just so folks know what's going on with that, I'm continuing to tweak it and play with it and consider it as I'm watching my Telos running athletes, the athletes I coach in my business, through this spring cycle, whether they're running marathons, half marathons, 5K, 10Ks, whatever the case may be. I'm basically workshopping it and working through the Mission Protocol with them. And what my plan is to bring back to all of you a comprehensive and more complete concept around the Mission Protocol. It'll be like a bookend to the back end of it. It doesn't mean that that will be all there is to say about it. It just means that I introduced a big concept, and then I'm going to kind of finish off and close it up, at least for this cycle. Of course, within the Telos running community, we're going to continue to utilize that model really extensively. As I said, I find it to be extremely useful and very beneficial. But if some of you who are listeners have been using the Mission Protocol for yourself, I'd love to hear from you about what your experience with it is. If you'd be willing to send me an email at sisson@telosrunning.com, and share with me your experiences, positive, negative, neutral, whatever the case may be. I would love to hear from you. And I might even use it in the episode that I cut. Probably it'll be in late May, early June, after I've got a chance to go through all of that. So I just wanted to kind of let everybody know where we were sitting with that particular project. I also want to talk a little bit about what I see as the future of this podcast, or the lack thereof. I initially restarted this podcast because I felt like much of the content I was creating within my Telos running community wasn't being fully utilized in the community because they were busy with their lives, weren't really interested in consuming the kind of content in the way that a podcast kind of looks. And with my history of podcasting, both with the Running Rogue podcast and then the various other projects I've done and am still doing, I just felt like maybe it would make a lot of sense to, if I was providing content for my Telos running folks and there, you know, was only 15 or 20 people responding to it and I had a listenership of, you know, in the thousands, maybe more people would benefit from that content. And then I could go deeper into it with my Telos running folks. And I got permission from that crew, from the athletes that pay me consistently to help them, that they thought that would be a good idea. So that's what I've been doing. And it's working okay. But as you note, I haven't been as consistent with the podcast as I initially stated. I'd always said it was going to be a bi-weekly podcast, so one every 2 weeks. But even that has been a challenge. I've continued to do the inner work dialogues with Kobe. I'll have another one of those coming out next week. And those are really fulfilling. And I have a great time doing them. And they fit pretty well within the running on purpose construct, I think. And they're also co-released with, in the zone, I think it's, he calls it In the Zone, is what Kobe Blundell's coaching and podcast format is. And so that's wonderful to do. And I just use this particular venue in which to distribute and disseminate that stuff. But, you know, the episode that I cut on the Mission Protocol was very, very challenging to produce. It took a lot of time and energy. It's, you know, really, if you think about it, it's many, many, many years of experience that coalesced into something that I thought might be useful for many people. And I just want to say that I think that if I'm going to be able to continue to produce that kind of content, this kind of content, that is focused on a community of folks who are interested in training and racing topics, might be interested in the idea of the body, the mind, and the soul, that we've got to collaborate. We have to do this together. Because if it's a one-way street, I'm just going to lose focus. And I'll just start doing something different with my Telos crew. I have another project that I've been considering doing for nearly 9 months now, but I just don't have the bandwidth to do that and be thinking about doing this Running on Purpose podcast at the same time. I am going to continue this through 2024, guaranteed. Maybe an episode every 2 weeks, maybe an episode every month. Who knows what it will be, but I'll be committed to producing and consistently putting out content because I made a commitment to do so. But I just want to say this as a producer of a podcast that asks for nothing from you. I don't have advertisers. I don't ask you to do this under a Patreon or some firewalled or you know, paywalled place. This is free content for the whole world and potentially in perpetuity. But for those of you who consistently listen to this, I need you to step up. I need you to recognize, if you value this podcast, I need you to get on and do one of three things. Number one, wherever you listen to this podcast, give it a rating. Or number two, give it a rating and then a review. Maybe you can review an episode particularly that was interesting to you, or review the show overall, or just give me some hand claps and fire and hearts if you want to do the emoji path. Now, you might be, why do that? I've said in the past that it's because it allows people to find each other. It allows other people to find the podcast. And that's true. And that's very important, probably for the Keep Going podcast. But, you know, the Keep Going podcast and the Inner Work Dialogues podcast, they just are great energy in and of themselves. The feedback loops are phenomenal. I'm always excited about going to cut those episodes. And in order for me to get motivated to talk into a microphone that gets pushed out into the whole world, and I know based on listenership that I've got a couple of thousand people listening to it across the world, and I get no feedback from you all as to how you're interacting with it, what you're doing with it, how it's working for you. And I need it. Every podcast that you listen to that's freely disseminated, where they're not asking for you to give them something back and they don't have advertisements, you owe them. Nothing is free. Everything costs something. And all I'm asking for you in return is some positive feedback loops. I don't really care. I don't even know if I'll go and look at the reviews that you post. Well, I probably will because, you know, I'm that kind of guy. I care. But more importantly, it's just a way of giving back to somebody who's giving you something. I'm an inveterate podcast listener. I listen to probably nearly 100 podcasts that I subscribe to. And in my top 10 or top 15, maybe even my top 20, I've definitely giving them stars and a review. Because I know it matters as a podcaster. And then when they have a particular episode that's really intriguing to me and really sort of hits me, in the balls or in the heart, I'll go on and post something specific about that to ensure that the host has a chance to hear and recognize that at least one person in their listening population really wants to engage with that content. Again, it's not a big ask, folks. It's a small ask, honestly. And the way it supports me is, yeah, maybe finding the others. Maybe there's an algorithm. I don't know about all that shit. I really don't care. I just want to hear from you. I want to know that it's helping you, that this is something you want me to continue to do. And I'll be doing it through the end of the year, 2024. But if I don't get responses and I don't get replies and there's not some kind of feedback from this particular ask that I'm making of you, I'll probably just let it drift off and go into that good night and then pick back up another project that I'm thinking about doing that I'm really excited about. Again, this is a labor of love and a gift from the heart. Yes, there's a benefit to my Telos running community, but I'll continue to create content for them in other ways if it's necessary and as it's necessary. But for those of you who are freeloading on this episode, on this podcast, I'm happy that you're able to freeload. But just remember, everything fucking costs something, and this may not be there if you don't give back. I'm not angry about it. Actually, more, I'm heartbroken and disappointed about it. So if you listen and this is touching you in any way, just do one of those two things. Give it a star or whatever it is on your podcast app, or make some kind of comment in the episode, in an episode or in the overall show notes or wherever that you do those things. And if for some reason that's just something you're not comfortable doing, then send me an email at sisson@telosrunning.com and tell me how I've impacted you and how this is really helping you and benefiting you. Because that's how I'm going to keep doing it, folks. And if I don't get that kind of response over the next 9 months, you can rest assured it will not be happening after that. I'm not trying to hold you hostage, but my time is my time and my energy is my energy. And I'd like to feel the love come back for all the love I'm putting out there. Sorry for the heavy, folks, but that's just the way it is. I love you. I care for every one of you that listens to this. If you're listening to this still at this point, then it means that my voice means something and my experience, my wisdom, whatever I have to share is benefiting you. And I thank you for that. Just send something back my way. I would really appreciate it. All right, folks, on to the next step, on to the episode. Godspeed, my friends. Godspeed. Happy Vernal Equinox 2024. Last night at 10 p.m., we shifted seasons. This marks the scientific and mythic transition of winter into spring. Of course, it's associated with Easter and the death, burial, and resurrection of Jesus Christ, and the temporary return of Persephone, goddess of spring, from her enslavement in the underworld with Hades, which results in the rejuvenation of crops and the cycle of agriculture that starts over. These are deep, deep cyclical time representations, and they have a physiological, psychological, and soul level impact upon us. And for many runners, it marks the final preparations for the annual pilgrimage to Hopkinton and the most desired starting line experience on the planet, the Boston Marathon. It also marks, for high schoolers and college athletes, the beginning of the outdoor season. The smells of cut grass, flowers, and the taste of blood and lactic at the finish of races. So I wanted to use this opportunity to highlight the importance of these cycles and rhythms in a runner's life, because I feel so many athletes disregard the seasons and the cycles, and it can have a really significant impact on the bodies, minds, and souls of the athlete. I came to this idea by listening to the following snippet of Merlin Sheldrake from the Tetragrammaton podcast that Rick Rubin produces. Again, for those listening later, this is March 2021 if you want to find that episode. It'll be linked in the show notes. Merlin is the famed biologist Rupert's son, and his recent book, Entangled Life, was one of my favorite reads of 2023, and I highly recommend it. So in this, you'll hear him describing the various cycles of life. I thought it'd be a great opportunity to share some thoughts around how I feel the importance of life rhythms and cycles are to our planning and experience of running. Here's the snippet.
Talk about the cycle of life on the planet.
Well, I would say cycles of life.
Okay.
Yeah. There are so many cycles of life, right? There are cycles in our own body. Each heartbeat is a kind of cycle. You know, you have these cyclical patterns that repeat. So we have heartbeats, which are a fairly short timescale cycle. Then we have daily cycles, circadian cycles, and then our monthly cycles and annual cycles, and in the form of seasons and the things that we eat and the way that we behave at different times of year. And that's just us. And so all different organisms are cycling on all sorts of scales together. So when that all adds up, then you get these kind of rhythmic pulses in the biosphere, and you have climate patterns and climate shifts, and then longer patterns like El Niños and Niñas that occur over multi-year cycles, and then even larger cycles like ice ages, you know, and then every much longer cycles, and the Earth's magnetic poles will flip. And so I see it all as these kind of nested cycles. But one of the cycles of life that seems very important is the way that matter journeys through living bodies. So when we die, we decompose, and the stuff that makes up our bodies is recomposed into new forms. So I'm very interested in fungi, which are organisms that are at positions at key junctures in those kind of decomposition, recomposition cycles. I think a lot about that.
Is there always the same amount of stuff?
So in that snippet, Merlin shares how important, and it's such a beautiful way of going through in from a micro scale to a macro scale and then back to the micro scale. And it just so inspired me and made me think, gosh, I'm going to do an episode on this. I had another episode planned for today, but I decided I wanted to share that what I just shared with you earlier with in terms of the hope that you all will consider supporting the podcast at some level with this, what I think or hope will be a shorter episode. And I'll save that other episode that I had planned for another time. There's plenty where that came from. You know, I view that the key value to attending to the cycles and thinking about life cycles and the rhythms of life is that we become much more highly attuned to our inner workings. And we can notice how those inner workings relate us more deeply to the outer world and how the outside world works. To thinking about how our location, where we physically live, I live in Austin, Texas. You might live in Belgium. You might live in Australia. Wherever you live, there's a unique outer working to the cycles and rhythm of life in the place that you're living. To our environment in general, in terms of how we're seeing climate change and how we're seeing the cycles of weather and patterns of weather shift and change, and how those are normal in some cases and are impacted by our inner and outer workings as humans. We can think about our place on the planet from the perspective of the fact that we are in one location, but we're on this globe that's spinning, that has so much diversity of life and so much experience, and each turning of the globe and each turning of the globe around the sun has its own incredible rhythm and cycle. And finally, though we're not highly attuned to this, there's also a very deep order and cycling and rhythm to the cosmos, which Merlin mentions in that clip. And this deeper rhythm of life is something we're not always aware of, but it absolutely significantly impacts our life from moment to moment, from hour to hour, day to day, and so on. So in this episode, I'm going to highlight a few kinds of rhythms or cycles that I think might be really helpful to you to consider. In typical running on purpose fashion, we'll be discussing these from the perspective of the body, the mind, and the soul. So we are going to be really specific to things that might have an impact on how our body functions and how that affects us from a running perspective. Also the mind, in terms of thinking through how cycling and rhythms of time and cycle hit us on a psychological level. Maybe we even can consider that on a religious level if you wanted to, or a cultural level if that is a place. And then finally, I want to highlight a little bit of how that operates on the soul level, something that's beyond what we might call consensus reality, that many of us are tapped into regardless, which is why I use the term soul. And maybe I will, and I actually need to do a full episode on the soul at some point in time so people have a better idea of what I'm talking about when I mention it. And I do mention it often, right? So my goal is, or my hope is, that this will open us all up to a greater awareness of our place overall in the rhythm and the cycle of life. So let's start first with human perception, how we take in information in our world, in our life, in our body, in our experience, and how we use that to be in relation to time and to cycles. We'll talk about time as one, but also other cycles. So paying attention and being present, in my opinion, is extremely important here. While there are these cycles occurring, we frequently are spending so much time in the past or in the future thinking about things that we might want to change, or that we should have changed, or things that we are really happy we had accomplished. That's a past experience. Or thinking forward to the future. For runners, this is especially challenging because we're always thinking, what's my next workout? What's my next race? How am I moving forward? And when we are in the past or in the future, we're really not capable of being present to whatever's happening cyclically, cyclically, and in terms of time or rhythm internally and externally. We need to be present in the moment that we're in to be able to fully take advantage of whatever is actually happening right here with us. I'm not going to belabor this point. I'm just going to make it at the outset. And the reason I make it at the outset is because it's really, really important for you to be keeping in mind as we go through all the rest of the points, and as you find yourself slipping into a past or future experience of considering cycles, that you just take a moment to sit and rest. For example, the creation of this episode in the first place was around the recognition last night that this was the vernal equinox, and I had an opportunity to think about cycling and time and how Persephone's coming back. I was reading something and it basically said, talked about how Persephone shows up, at least mythically, and that this was exactly the time frame we're in right now, and it really spurred me. So being present in that moment gave me an opportunity to think and reflect on this. You may be wishing that didn't happen, but here we are. The next thing I want to focus on is just the varieties of experiencing time. So there's so many ways as humans that we experience time. We experience time through our conscious awareness. We're experiencing time through our embodied experience, through hormones, and those kinds of things. We're experiencing time from the perspective of a developmental phase of childhood into adolescence, into adulthood, into later adulthood. We experience time on the daily level, on the, you know, from the minute to the hour to the day to the month to the year, and all the places that that functions and operates in the way we think of time and cycles, cycling of time as well. And of course, just reminding you of what Merlin was talking about, of all those different cycles, all those different kinds of cycles, it gives us an opportunity to really be present in being human and to really recognize what a gift we have to be conscious and aware that we're having an experience of our experience. And it's not entirely certain, but it seems to be at least above the water that we're one of the few species on the planet that have the opportunity to do this. There are blessings and curses to that, of course, but we are conscious of our own awareness. We are conscious of our own experience, what it means to be Steve or what it means to be you listening to this podcast, sitting in a chair or on a car or running or whatever way you're experiencing it, you're aware of your awareness. And that is a huge opportunity for whatever reason, whether it's a random chance selection in a Big Bang, or if it was planned and created by a creator God somewhere out there, or if it's anything in between. Regardless, we have this unique opportunity to experience the varieties of time. And that's huge. It's really huge. And then finally, as humans, I just want to recognize that I'm going to be talking about kinds of cycles or kinds of rhythms, but I am not, this is not exhaustive. I'm just highlighting and attuning us to a few that I think might be impactful to us from a running perspective. But that there are incredible numbers of cycles and rhythms, and this is one of the really unique and incredible aspects of life in the universe, and that life in the universe coheres and has some form of rhythm and flow, some kind of order to it when it's seemingly confusing and hard for any of us to determine how and why this might have happened, the chance, likelihood that we would be able to be conscious. So I just wanted to highlight that the importance of our perception and paying attention to the cycles of time and being present to them, that there are all kinds of ways and varieties of experiencing time, and finally, that I'm just scratching the surface on what we might be able to discuss here and what might be important to talk about. So let's talk about some cycles of the body, okay? First one I want to highlight, and again, I'm going to say this is kind, it's not exhaustive, but thinking about it, the cycles of the body cardiovascularly, and this is what really got my attention in Merlin's quote. He said, he was talked about how we don't even really pay attention to the beating of the heart as a cycle, that it's we as athletes, we're really cognizant of our heart rate. We think about our heart rate in the mornings when we first wake up to see and how to test us on how our sleep cycle was, how we did well with what happened with our sleeping. We, those who are using heart rate monitors to pay attention to the way that they're using effort or pace, they're using a heart rate monitor or the cycle of the heart. But regardless of whether you're covering that and paying attention to that from a data perspective, it's still happening. And the fact that your physiology is operating this way, where your heart tends to pump out or filter the water, the blood out to your working muscles to get them to do the things that they need to do and carry the oxygen and fire the energetic pathways that are necessary to do all that. This is happening in a very quick 180, 190 beats when you're moving really, really fast and really hard, or 120 or 110 beats when you're running really, really easily. But there's this constant, think about that, 100, at minimum 120 cycles when you're running of your heart beating and coming back. And while you're not conscious or aware of that particular cycle, it's crucial to the functioning of your ability to do the thing that you want to do. And as you get faster and work harder and press harder, that number goes up. And so the cycle changes and adjusts and adapts to what is happening in real time based on the effort that you're using. Such an incredibly powerful way for us to pay attention to or think about the variety of our experience. And it aligns in this idea of time. I'll be toggling between this sort of awareness and being present to the time structure, which is, you know, I know the time structure is sort of situated in the past frequently when we think about it, or time structure is situated in the future when we think about it. Often, if we're really recognizing the present moment, we're not really aware of how time switches and shifts. But these are this is the paradox I'm trying to bring forward. So we can think about blood flow that way and how it operates. Another really interesting way for runners to be thinking about this is from the breath. And we don't really track our heart rate frequently. We don't necessarily track our breath rate. And I'm really, really keenly interested and wondering why this is. I did some research on this recently, just trying to scratch the surface. And there's not a whole lot of scientific study or even colloquial, non-empirical discussion of it. We're always focused on our heart rate, but yet our breath is also equally important. And it is the piece that we actually have a little bit more control over. We can affect how we breathe and the way we breathe. And when we get a side stitch, many people who first start running, they have the experience of getting a side stitch. And nearly always that side stitch is related to an improper use of the diaphragm or the rhythm of your breath cycle. And once you can get into gain the access to your breathing rate and controlling your breathing weight, which is one of the very few cycles internally that we have an effect upon, you can stem that and stop that cramp from happening, that side stitch from happening, just purely and simply by your awareness of the cycling that's going through and how that's working. Of course, if you pay attention to many people who are working with a psychotherapist or psychologist, or they're working on stress and trauma and these related things, breath work has become incredibly important. My 7-year-old daughter, she's focused when she goes to speak with her therapist around her ability to control her breath when she's out of control. So even for someone so young, they're already showing how the importance of your breath impacts your nervous system and your ability to de-escalate when stress gets high and re-regulate your nervous system to an effect to allow you to do more, better. And I have repeated this over and over in many of my podcasts and many of my discussions with my athletes that I work with, of the relative importance, how critically important the nervous system is to how we're doing, and how the breath is one of the few pathways that we have, one of the few cycles and rhythms that we have to help us optimize our performance and our experience. Another area that we can think of from a cycling of the body that's really important is sleep and hormones. So how we sleep and the cycle in which we sleep is really, really important to our ability to perform in running. In fact, more often than not, it's the critical thing that I hear other coaches and other athletes talking about. It's certainly all over the wellness industries that we are all paying attention to at some level, how critical and important sleep is. And what is sleep but a cycle? A like cyclical rhythm of getting in bed, falling asleep, allowing our body to take over and do all the things that it needs to do metabolically, psychologically, physiologically at every level. And that also deeply impacts how hormonally we operate. But the sleep is this regulation of the hourly cycle that then has an impact on our hormones, which are regulating the energy and the physiology and our behavior. I don't spend a whole lot of time talking about hormones because it's a challenging area and I don't have a high level of expertise in it. I do think it's incredibly important and something I would like to learn more about and get more involved with in terms of thinking about it from a training perspective. But all of us know that we have these 24-hour cycles of the sun rising and sunsetting, the sun rising and going down. We also have, for women especially, a menstrual or luteal cycle, which goes on a monthly schedule. And so this ebb and flowing, this regulation of the energy and physiology deeply impacts our behavior, which then obviously impacts the ability for us to be effective and useful in our training. And so we've got this other cycle going on, the how we sleep and then how our hormones are working and how that's happening, whatever's going on in this biochemical soup that's going on with our hormonal structures and all the various things that are happening. And then also from a hormonal level, something that's really interesting too, is it's the way that our tissues and organs, so the organs and the tissues in our body through this biochemistry are communicating. This brings me back to Merlin Sheldrake and the rest of that episode, which I obviously didn't want to put a 2-hour episode in my own podcast episode. But his book, Entangled Minds, talks a lot about the mycelial network of mushrooms and how important, how interesting that system is and how useful it is for us to be able to think about it from a human perspective and our interconnectedness, which I'll talk about in a little bit. But this idea of communication and how cycles are allowing for the communication to happen and allowing for the uptake of important physiological attributes in our sleep, the potential psychological benefit of dreaming and how dreaming is allowing us to metabolize, alchemize, or process our day-to-day activities in the waking world in a sleep state. So interesting, these cycles, and important to be considering, not necessarily the exact specifics of it, but just recognizing that there is this crucial and critical cycle. And again, I'm just highlighting a few of these. And finally, we can just talk about this easily and quickly from a training and racing perspective. It's very obvious that we have these kinds of cycles of our body when we think about training. Your coach will create a plan, or you, if you're self-coached, create a plan in which you follow a particular cycle. You follow a weekly cycle where on some days you're running easy and some days you're doing specific kinds of faster paced work to try to elicit a response or a physiological adaptation to prepare you for a race. And you probably do that in some kind of hard cycle with an easy cycle. Again, tell us we do 2 weeks up and 1 week down, and that down week or that drop week is a time in which we are cycling through a very easy, relaxed period before we start again another cycle or another rhythm of faster, harder work, trying to create some kind of coherence and consistency that will allow an ordered procession of our ability to uptake and benefit from the training. Now, whether that order is critical and crucial for the adaptation is something that I'm not entirely certain of. But I do know that it's really, really helpful to our psychological processing of that. And we're able to feel consistent and a part of something. We're in a cycle, in a rhythm of how we operate with training. And of course, when we think through our cycles of seasons, what we might call a macro cycle, where you start for 3 months, 4 months, 5 months out from a particular key command performance race, and then you focus on doing certain kinds of work and certain kinds of rhythms to get you to have a performance that's hopefully the kind of performance that gives you an opportunity to run a beautiful race and perhaps even reach a goal and hit a time that you're trying to hit. And then you take a time of period, short period of reflection and recovery, and then you start that whole cycle back again and sort of following this rhythm of the body that's externally motivated. I mentioned being internal workings and the outer workings and how interrelated these are. But do you ever think about the inner experience of that cycling and that process and how you might reflect on that and use that effectively to try to optimize your running practice and then also optimize the short phases where you're really in a really focused intent on a pursuit and a particular goal time and a particular goal experience in an event. And these are cycles and rhythms that come and go. These are very obvious. What I've just described, these three, they are unequivocal. They're absolutely happening in our bodies if we're training. So just want, again, to bring that awareness to that. You can also think of cycles of the mind. Now, in this case, I'm going to use mind in a very expanded sense. I want you to consider the idea of mind from the perspective of being minded, not necessarily the brain and the brain itself, but the entire system that we have is a human for being conscious of our regulation and what's going on in our experience. Sometimes I think that I would call this psychological, or use the word psyche is one I would prefer to use over mind, but psyche is not well understood, and so I'm just not going to do that. But this idea of mind is that the mindedness we have is our experience of being this experiencer. And, you know, one way that we do this is in a solar and a lunar perspective. We have a solar and a lunar mind. Now, I mentioned sleep from the physical perspective of the body, but think also, I've been doing a good bit of research on dreams and how we have this conscious experience while we're sleeping. While you may not remember it, some of us are better at remembering our dreams. We're able to have better recall and articulation of what's going on when we're dreaming, and maybe even be able to bring back some insights from the dream space to help us with our day-to-day. But for sure, there's no doubt that that dreaming process is allowing our bodies and our minds to metabolize an experience and go through and try to be better prepared for our next day. Just as our body's metabolizing our food for energy, we need to be metabolizing through the lunar mindset, through the mindset of being asleep, being the mindset of being in the dark, in the mindset of resetting to be prepared and ready for the next day, regardless of the actual time cycle that might benefit you physiologically, psychologically. We all know this. Most of us, when we're experiencing some kind of insomnia or some kind of sleep challenge, we're more often than not replying to being frustrated and fretting about the psyche or the mind experience of our lack of being able to sleep. Very rarely are we thinking about it from the perspective of how we'll operate. Now, maybe as a runner, you think about that, but more often as just a general human being, we're not thinking about that. But we are very conscious that there's this mindset, a lunar mindset, of a sleep mindset that we really need in order to be effective and sharp and prepared for the solar cycle of our mind. And in that, the varieties of mind are innumerable, very dependent on culture and the place that you're in, how you're operating and where you are in life and where all these things. But none of us can deny that in being a mind, we're having a solar and a lunar experience. And then we can follow the cycle of that. And the consciousness of that cycle, the being aware of that cycle, allows us to be able to think and utilize it in a more effective way. Now, you're not going to be able to keep all these cycles together, right? But what I'm just doing is trying to bring to your awareness how these cycles are deeply impacting our day-to-day experience. And frequently, we don't pay attention to them. So another is the equinox and the solstice. I mentioned that this was the vernal equinox, the spring shift, the time in which the sun is at the equator, it's exactly balanced, so the time of night and the time of day are equal. But this equinox and solstice line out into the seasonality and the way we experience weather, because weather has a huge impact on our minds, especially as runners. Most of us are enjoying a pretty amazing phase of our running experience right now, where the weather is conducive and allows us to have really quality experiences in our training that help us align to our particular pace per mile, because our bodies aren't working really, really hard to keep us warm or really, really hard to keep us cool as we deal with in the winter and the summer. And so this idea of equinox and solstice, of spring, summer, fall, winter, are really important to the way that we operate psychically and mentally. We can think of the rituals that we have in our life, and I'll be talking about that in just a second, that revolve around these things. But this is in our mind's experience. We are having a summer mind and a winter mind, a spring mind and a fall mind. Some of these are idiosyncratic and unique to each individual. But really, I think most of us can see that there are some kind of patterns here going on that are discernible. And we have seasonal affective disorder that people talk about for those folks who live up in the Northwest, Pacific Northwest, or up in the higher latitudes where, you know, you don't get as much sun during the wintertime, or you're socked in because of the weather, and how that can impact us. So this idea of the equinox and the solstice is really important to how we operate from a minded perspective. Again, this is an ongoing important cycle that we're not really cognizant of or not really paying attention to quite so much. And finally, from a minded perspective and thinking about a more conscious experience of things, I just want to tap quickly, and I'll talk about this a little bit more when we get into soul, but just how these rhythms of life and death are also really important to the way that we operate with our minds. This concept of life and death is something in our Western society we're really reticent to contemplate. I don't think that runners are particularly good at relating to life and death, or aren't particularly better relating to that or not, because it's just something that is verboten in our society in the West to discuss on a consistent basis. In fact, when anybody talks about life and death, most of us turn away. We will give our condolences, say whatever we need to say, and then allow that person to go through whatever natural process that needs to happen from a life and death perspective. But when we're talking about cycles of the mind and where life and death come into the play here, we're talking about how there are extinction events in our consciousness from a mental perspective. Now, I'm going to leave it there, and I'm going to bring this back near the end, but I just wanted to highlight and discuss a little bit of this idea of life and death, and I'll hit it much more with soul, and then as we go into our closing. So the cycles of the soul, you may have noticed in this podcast that I'm reticent sometimes to talk about the soul. I'll mention it, but then I sort of step away. And one of the commitments I'm making with this vernal equinox is to continue to discuss the soul where and when it makes sense and is appropriate. Not to beat you over the head with it, but just to continue to utilize it as a way of maybe bringing to your attention the potentiality and the idea that you have a soul, or that you're operating as if you have a soul. Because its physiological location in our body is not really what we're discussing. Our soul is in that mindedness, in that psyche space. But I also argue and think and believe, not from a supernatural perspective, but from whatever place that Jung was talking about, C.G. Jung, and his idea of the unconscious, therein lies whatever the soul is. And the soul comes from that mystery place, that place of unknowing. But I don't want to go down that road too far. I just want to make you aware of it. So let's talk of three or four different ways in which we can consider cycles of the soul. So one is in ritual. And this is sort of a recapitulation of the mindedness part. But the rituals that we have along the equinox and the solstice, we have Easter. We don't really focus so much on the summer solstice, although we used to as a society. Now we have the 4th of July or whatever else. Thinking about the fall, we have Halloween. We have that's approaching around that same basic time frame, although it's a little later. All Hallows Eve, Day of the Dead, those kinds of things. And finally, we have absolutely Christmas, which is based on, if you look at it historically, much of what Christmas is based on this old ritualistic cycle of times with being with family, times of relating effectively to each other along ritualistic perspectives. You can also think of ritual in the sense of a cycle of the soul, of your commitment to your community and from a running perspective. The days that you show up for your sessions and the people that you choose to run with on a consistent basis, you are set up on a cycle of the soul. If you meet a running group at a particular time and day consistently, then you're very aware of how that ritual is part of a cyclical process. And where and when you lie, where and how you lie within that cyclical process. It's a ritual. It's a consistent doing. Think about the ritual of your eating, ritual of your sleep, ritual of the natural processes that go on. These are soul cycles, soul rhythms that you can be paying attention to. And when you follow your rituals, whatever they may be, and you track them, and you contemplate them and think through them and begin to take what might be unconscious or you're not aware of and bring it up to the level of paying attention to an awareness space, you might begin to really see how it actually is a rhythm or a cycle, and therefore deeply impacting and impactful in your day-to-day life. And then you can tap into something at a soul level that can be really, really impactful. Another cycle of the soul we might call alchemical or elemental. This is the idea that comes before science starts, that we go through a nine-step process in which we recalibrate, rejuvenate, and flow through. I'm not going to go deep into alchemy. I do have a goal at some point of doing a whole series on alchemy. But alchemy is a cycle of the soul where there's these particular steps, calcination, all these different steps that you go through to help develop yourself as a soul, to be aware of and to earn the right to have a soul. So there's those alchemical cycles. Then there's astrological cycles. Whether or not you believe astrology is a potent and real, has potent and real effects on the day-to-day operations or on the world, there's no doubt that it has some kind of psychic and soul level connection. Those folks who are deep into astrology will tell you that they're able to make predictions about the future and be able to give some clarity about the past and allow us to make better decisions in the present to operate from that perspective by taking these kinds of things into account. Whether or not that's real or not, it is absolutely a cycle of the soul and something folks can tap into. Again, another area of interest that I have that I think I might eventually do a series on. We shall see. And then finally, just that cycle of life and death again, where this lines into mindedness and this lines into soul. It's very, very easy to see. I'll talk about that a little bit more. So just to finish up, I want to go through how awareness of cycles matters. I'm going to give us three different places where I think these matters. As you can see, I like the idea of threes. So how awareness matters, the first one is in the passage of time. So we are highly influenced by our habits around time. We wake at a certain time, we go to sleep at a certain time. We eat breakfast at a certain time, we eat lunch at a certain time. We try to eat dinner at a certain time, or we don't do all those things, but we have other habits around time. We show up to work at a certain time on a particular day. We measure our lives through our habits around time. And so recognizing these varieties of time and how we relate to them and how they pass, as well as how we situate ourselves in the cycle of time as it's passing, is so immensely critical. But this is the thing that I want to make us most aware of. We take it for granted. I really think an awareness of how time cycles through and how those cycles provide our rhythm for life can be really fruitful avenues for exploration of how we are cyclical and how we are in rhythm. And we have the opportunity to lean into our experience of life, how we live our life, through checking in at the present moment. And this is really interesting. The passage of time, from my perspective, is always related to in the present moment. I've said before on this and other podcasts that it's very hard or not impossible to have, when you're in the past, you're in the present experiencing the past. You're not in the past. When you're in the future, you're in the present experiencing what you think of as the future. You're not in the future. So the opportunity to lean into our experiences of life through checking into the present moment gives us an opportunity to experience time from this subjective and experiential level. And this is really important. The idea of subjectivity is something that is really important for us to recognize as sort of our base soup experience, that we're experiencing these things subjectively through our own inner experience, and then we're acting outwardly from them. An awareness of the passage of time and an awareness of how the present moment impacts that and where that situates in past and future frames so much of our day-to-day experience, to say nothing of our month-to-month and year-to-year experience. So I really think that it matters to be considering and thinking from a cyclical perspective or a rhythmic perspective on the passage of time. Another area, and this is an area that I hold very deeply, it's part of my worldview. This is awareness, really, really, awareness of our cycles really, really matters in the context of kinship. So we share a deep relationality with our fellow humans. We all know that. whether we're screaming and yelling at them, whether we love them or we hate them, whether we're watching a hero on television activate and do a certain thing, or whether we're watching a child grow or a parent age, no matter what, we're deeply relational with our fellow humans. But one area that I think is really, really more important for us to begin to think about when we think about this awareness of how cycles matter is that the more than human world is equally important to how this cycle operates and how it works. In fact, we're entirely dependent. Our entire existence, our life ways, our life existence is dependent on our ability and our ability to track the cycles that exist. For example, just simply, the cycle of seasons impacts photosynthesis. This is the absolutely critical way in which we can afford any physical action, because that's how we get energy production. Our dependence on the sun and on the moon, there are ways in which we can connect to the other forms of life on the earth and develop a stronger sense of kinship that just might help us avert the destruction of the planet. This idea of being connected to plants, to the trees, and the way that they process our carbon dioxide and then produce oxygen for us, and how their energetic process fuels the energy of the earth and the energy of nature and how it operates and consistently plays through. We can think about this cycle, this rhythm, from a perspective of connection, of how plants, animals, the earth, the stars are our kin. We have a deep relationality, a deep relationship with them. And just as we connect with our human families, as I mentioned, through the rituals of holidays and birthdays, community events that are based on our time and passage of time cycles in a human realm, we can also connect to the deeper rhythms of kinship that we share with our earthly partners as stewards. We all know the deep impact of the loss of biodiversity. When we relate to the cycle of life and death, we relate to the cycle of how our choices, our life choices, through our use of fossil fuels, through our use of all kinds of things that are impacting the human impact on the more than human world, we can see this deep rhythm of connection. And that recognition can provide experiences that can just simply be called awe. And we can tap into the effortless and seemingly eternal ebb and flow of life. And finally, another way in which cycles matter, this is deeply related to the idea of life and death. And I want to finish with this idea of life and death, with the heavy. The French have a term, la petite mort, the little death. This word relates, primarily it's thought of in modern culture, at least. It's used typically to indicate the orgasm or sexual reproduction. That there's a little death. Maybe on the male perspective, if he's definitely having a little death, and on the female perspective, if they have an orgasm, this period of time where there's no self-consciousness, where your sense of self is diffuse. It's just a short little window of not being aware of having a little death. And there are many of these little deaths in our lives. Sleep, sex, meals, dealing with loved ones, our own death. And the little deaths that we experience all the time have the opportunity to alert us to the growth and rejuvenation that accompanies all of the many little deaths at every level of a universal existence. Bob Dylan said, "He not busy busy being born is busy dying." And that's a bit of a negative way of determining or stating that without death, we can't be born again. we must die, and then we keep getting born again. This is the cycle, the ultimate cycle, la petite mort. This little death, as I said, it's a brief loss or weakening of our self-consciousness. And this brief loss of this self-consciousness allows us to better connect in the river of life that flows through all things. It does this in an ongoing cycle of life and death and rebirth. And as we experience these small ways of dying, as I mentioned, sleeping and waking, the seasons, the beginning and ending of a workout, the beginning and ending of a training cycle, or the larger ways where we see our experience of dealing with the death of a loved one, or as I said before, or eventually our own death. This awareness of the cycle of life, this awareness of the rhythms of life, and a deep relationality to it will absolutely make you a better runner. It will absolutely increase your joy. It will allow you to feel connection in your suffering, and it will place you in a much larger context of kin, connection, and purpose. And that's what this episode, that's what this podcast is all about, running on purpose. So I hope you find this episode useful, maybe moderately inspiring. Again, it was just something I came up with in the moment on the day. And I really hope you enjoy it. So Godspeed, my friends. Godspeed until next time.